I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Before we start this week's episode of Nexium on Trial, I wanted to take a moment to note that the paper's investigative coverage of Keith Raniere and his organization was supported primarily by ART subscribers, whose readership paid the salaries of reporters, copy editors, and digital designers, as well as the lawyers who provided the good counsel that made our work bulletproof against this highly litigious group. If you subscribe to the Times Union, thanks. If you don't, please consider supporting our watchdog reporting. Without you, the truth might never come to light. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Nexium on Trial, the Times Union's podcast about the strange case of the purported self-improvement group known as Nexium. Joining me once again is our outstanding cops and courts reporter, Rob Gavin, for what I guess, if it were not wildly inappropriate, we could call a special holiday edition of this podcast. So, Rob, how are you doing?
Hi, it's good to be here, Casey. Yeah, I mean, it is a holiday time of year for some, and for others, it's a time of year in which, you know, we're getting closer and closer to the sentencing dates for some people in Nexium as well.
Rob, just kind of if 2019, if the big story was, of course, the guilty pleas and, of course, the verdict of guilty on all counts handed down by a federal jury against Keith Raniere, the leader of Nexium. But what about 2020? Do you think the pandemic pretty much sat on a lot of the breaking news in the Nexium case? Certainly the biggest developments were the sentencings of Claire Bronfman and, of course, Keith Raniere, who was going away for the rest of his natural life and then some, if this sentence holds up.
Yeah, if I go back to almost a year ago in January of this year, I remember not scheduling plans for certain weeks in February, January even, because we were thinking Keith Raniere's sentencing was going to come up fairly soon. It kept getting rescheduled. And to be honest, that's not in and of itself all that unusual. In federal court, sentencings are delayed often. It does happen. I recently wrote about an unrelated case where I think it was several years where sentencing had not taken place. But in this case, you have a few factors, and the largest, of course, being the pandemic. Keith Raniere and Claire Bronfman, for that matter, are both now being held in the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. Claire was free on $100 million bond until her sentencing on September 30th. But in the case of Keith Raniere, he has been in the MDC, as it's called in Brooklyn, really for the better part of 2 years. He was arrested, of course, in March 2018 in Mexico. In his case, there is a large issue of COVID-19 in all jails, but particularly there as well. And because of that, lawyers were unable to visit their clients. Defense attorneys will visit their clients. They'll speak to them to come up with sentencing, a memorandum to send to a judge, because when a judge sentences a defendant, the judge always looks over recommendations from the prosecution and from the defense. And there's also a pre-sentencing investigation, which is conducted by federal probation officers. Well, the process gets slowed when you have a pandemic, as does the process with everything else. And what happened is that just kept getting delayed and delayed. And at one point, the judge, Judge Nicholas Garalfas, a senior judge, he seemed to be getting a little frustrated with the process, because he said in May, well, you know, we're going to sentence Keith Raniere, I believe it was the end of June, and there will be no further delays at this point. I'm going to sentence Claire Bronfman, no further delays. Well, a defendant has a right to appear at their sentencing and not have it be done virtually. So that did not happen. It was delayed. And ultimately, these sentencings did not take place until September 30th in the case of Claire Bronfman, and in Keith Raniere on October 27th. And it just was surreal when they happened, because, you know, we had been waiting a long time, and then just the process when those days arrived of getting into court, it was really something that you have to experience it. Just picture going through an airport security, but on steroids, and that might be a good way to describe it.
it's amazing to me, first of all, to remind me that the sentencing of Keith Raniere was almost 2 months ago. It seems like it was about 7 months ago. But we don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't have hard sentencing dates yet for any of the subsequent women, because all of them are women, who pleaded guilty in this case. Nothing scheduled, correct, as far as I know, for Allison Mack. Nothing for Nancy or Lauren Salzman, and so on, correct?
Correct. The reality is it's going to be very tough to schedule anything right now because of the pandemic. You have a situation where it's going to take it's extremely difficult just to have one sentencing that they had for Claire and then another one for Keith Raniere. And in that case, there were several different overflow courtrooms. It's kind of an amazing job. I mean, I can tell you, I was one of only about 8 newspaper reporters, media reporters in the actual courtroom during both sentencings. Most reporters did not get into them. And it was the great effort taken to social distance in both cases. The judge did say during the sentencings and at one point and during a hearing that we need to get these scheduled. But again, that's before we've had the surge in coronavirus that we've now had of late. So those sentences are going to take place in the new year. The question is when, and in and of themselves, those sentencings are all going to raise different questions depending on the defendant. I think the exposure for someone like Lauren Salzman, who was the major witness for the prosecution, granted she pled guilty to pretty serious crimes of racketeering and racketeering conspiracy. There's very serious crimes there, but I would just strongly caution anyone who thinks that or expects to see Lauren Salzman get a stiff and very stringent prison sentence that, generally speaking, when people cooperate with the federal government in racketeering cases, whether it's the mafia, whether it's a drug cartel, it is not uncommon at all to see people get very little time and sometimes almost no time. And she was an extremely valuable contributor. I personally would not be shocked if she didn't get any additional time. And that's just me personally. That's not based on any knowledge. It's very possible that part of that cooperation could have helped her mother. We don't know what Nancy Salzman did or didn't do before cutting a deal. We don't know what level of cooperation, if any, Nancy Salzman provided the federal government. And there very well could have been. And if there was, given her age, given the acceptance of responsibility, she has been ill at times in the last few years. She may also get very little or no jail time. You have a much tougher situation with Allison Mack. To the extent that she may or may not have cooperated, I don't know how much that was to the extent that this was a major assistance, like, say, Lauren Salzman or some of the other people, India Oxenberg, who was not charged in the case, but was an extremely valuable witness behind the scenes for the federal law prosecutors in putting their case together. Those are all things that come into consideration. And I think if you look at the Claire Bronfman sentencing, that in and of itself is kind of amazing because the judge went way over what even the prosecutor suggested. The prosecution suggested 5 years. And I think most people look at that like, well, they're probably not going to get that. And he sentenced her to 81 months, which if you do the math is 6 years and 9 months. That is just a sign that you say, wow. And again, a lot of this in federal court comes down to, among other factors, acceptance of responsibility. In the case of Claire Bronfman, she's still actively supporting Keith Raniere. In fact, he's on tape in phone calls from jail talking about how she's actively supporting him. She, went out of her way to not disassociate herself or disavow Keith Raniere. So that's something which the judge was very much aware of. Whereas someone like Lauren Salzman, it was visible in court to the judge. And let's not forget that the judge interrupted the cross-examination of Lauren Salzman because he frankly thought that Raniere's defense attorney, Mark Agnifilo, was being overly beyond what he needed to be in his cross-examination. And she was hysterical and, the judge had said that's also a human being there. So you look at all these factors, I think you will see the potential exposure to prison time, I think, could vary depending on the defendants. And let's not also forget there's Kathy Russell. her exposure could be less just because the nature of the crime was not racketeering. And so, you know, I don't know that you'll see significant, if any, jail time there either.
All right, Rob, hang on. We're just going to take a quick break.
If you're enjoying Nexium on Trial, be sure to check out its sister podcast, The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall, host of The Eagle. Each week, we'll take a look inside the newsroom at the Times Union, the Capital Region's oldest and largest newspaper. We'll discuss the week's top stories, and we'll talk to the award-winning reporters who write them. Listen at timesunion.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and now we're back with more Nexium on Trial. I'm here with Rob Gavin. Speaking of somebody, you just did sort of a year-ender story, and you focused in on the case of Danielle Roberts, who is someone who is facing no criminal charges, but is facing significant sort of professional sanction. She's a doctor. She's an osteopath in the Clifton Park area, or was, and she was the woman who wielded the cauterizing pen in the sessions where women were branded with this sigil that it later was revealed was nothing more than Keith Raniere's initials. She is among the group of, I think it's fair to call them, Nexium dead-enders, who have shown up, as you've written, to dance in front of MDC to offer, you know, support and comfort for Keith Raniere. She's a contributor to this website that basically makes the argument that there was nothing wrong with DOS. Everybody who did it without any kind of coercion, and that this is all very unfair and nothing more than a campaign by federal prosecutors who don't understand the complex choices that women make for their own empowerment.
Correct. Danielle Roberts is really one of the more fascinating figures in this whole saga, because Danielle Roberts is a doctor. She's from Long Island. You know, there's so many stories in Nexium of people who come from outside the country, whether it's Mexico, whether it's England, and get into this sort of self-help. Where am I, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And they go for one reason or another and sort of get sucked into it. In the case of Danielle Roberts, she's someone who joined, has a very well-to-do position. Obviously, it takes a long time to become a doctor. And she gets involved with sort of a mind, body, spirit group within Nexium known as EXO-ESO, EXO-ESO. It's sort of I guess yoga was part of it. There were a number of other people involved in it, but she was one of the key players in that company within Nexium. And Danielle Roberts was also a member of DOS. So she wasn't just a doctor who performed these acts, but she was a member of Allison Mack's line. Allison Mack being one of eight, quote unquote, first line slaves, first line masters who answered directly to Keith Raniere. So Danielle Roberts, based on appearances, just seems to be all in. Unlike India Oxenberg, unlike some other people, a lot of other people in Nexium and in DOS who have disavowed the group, like you say, she's been there with several other people, such as, you know, Michelle Hatchett, the leader. And I don't want to say this is an official title or something, but certainly Nikki Klein, the former Battlestar Galactica actress, she appears to be in some sort of a leadership type role among these efforts. And Danielle Roberts has been one of the people dancing outside the facility, like, you know, hardcore. And this is happening as her, you know, this is the summer. And meanwhile, March 5th, this complaint came from a disciplinary board within the state health department accusing her of gross negligence, gross incompetence, and among a whole bunch of other charges within the department. These aren't criminal charges, but these are charges within the medical field that can have her license stripped. And that's already happened to another doctor who was in Nexium, Brandon Porter, who did experiments on brain experiments on people in affiliated with Nexium. Well, this is about as key a role as possible. If you think of Nexium, what is it that got Nexium to the forefront of the public? And you look at the documentaries out there, The Vow, Seduced, which is about India Oxenberg. It's all stuff related to DOS And Daniel Roberts is the person who, among other people, put a brand on Sarah Edmondson, who is the whistleblower who came forward. So you really can't, it's hard to really underestimate the role in which Daniel Roberts played. And then there's this sort of side story, which I find really interesting, in that she volunteers. These members of DOS are on a website called the Dossier Project, in which they speak openly about having been a member of DOS, which they say is no longer around. Of course, it's a secret group when it was around, so I don't know how well you could take that. That being said, she volunteers on her sort of testimonial that her family doesn't seem to understand this, and that they, you know, that she's not being brainwashed, and people think she's being brainwashed. And you hear someone who has had a medical career, you know, you can imagine how hard it must be to become a doctor and to essentially throw it away for someone in Keith Raniere, who was now widely known as the cult leader. I mean, that's got to be very tough for, I would imagine, many people to sort of see through. But the members of, like you say, the NXIVM Dead Enders, they seem to be all in. And I think one of the things to watch in the new year going forward will just be to see, just as Keith Raniere continues this 120-year prison sentence, which is obviously a life term, will there be more defectors? Because the people who have defected from NXIVM, most if not all of them, were every bit as all in as these people were, with a lot to lose. And you know, you look at the key witness, Lauren Salzman, she was completely all in. You know, you look at all these other people, Mark Vicente was completely all in. The people who are now known as probably the top opponents of Keith Raniere, almost all of them, with some exceptions, were high-ranking members of Keith Raniere's inner circle. So it wouldn't be a shock to see some of these people down the road maybe say, oh my God, what's going on here? And I don't know if Daniel Roberts will be one of those people or not, but her story to me is fascinating because her career hangs in the balance here. We know Keith Raniere's been sentenced. We know Nancy Salzman and Lauren Salzman and, you know, Claire Bronfman, that they pled guilty. But we don't know what the finding will be on Daniel Roberts.
Daniel Roberts, if not for the state taking action, Daniel Roberts could be your osteopath the next time you have to go to the osteopath. I wanted to bring up something that came up in a very good piece that appeared at the end of November in the New York Times, written by Barry Meyer. And Barry Meyer, of course, is the journalist who broke the story of DOS in the fall of 2017, correct? I'm not skipping a year there.
Technically Frank Parlata exposed it a few months earlier.
That's true, but it was really Barry Meyer's story that really kind of took it nationally.
Correct.
And Barry Meyer wrote a very good piece after watching The Vow, which is the HBO miniseries, and watching Seduced, which is the Starz significantly shorter documentary that was, as you noted, focused on India Oxenberg's story. And what was revealed in this recent piece by Barry Meyer is that he got onto the NXIVM story because he received outreach from the filmmakers behind The Vow, or who went on to direct The Vow. And they had a previous, you know, relationship with Barry Meyer because they had spoken to him about a year earlier about potentially doing a documentary based on a book that he had written about an FBI agent who disappeared in Iran. So that, to me, just speaking for myself, this is my opinion as an editor, is something that should have been disclosed in The Vow. That is the filmmakers who go beyond sort of being flies on the wall when essentially they help select the reporter who is going to bring this story to light. Barry Meyer is, of course, interviewed in The Vow as well. Now, absolutely nothing to say about Barry Meyer's journalism, which is terrific. But it's something that, as a viewer of The Vow, I think it was a misstep for the filmmakers to leave it out. And it also, I think, speaks to the concern that a number of people have raised. This was raised in, I think, a really good piece in The Atlantic and elsewhere about the fact that Mark Vicente, who was the first person connected to Barry Meyer, at least initially in the documentary, or rather when he spoke with Barry Meyer, said that he thought that NXIVM was really a great thing that had done a lot of good in the world. It's just that Keith Raniere was a sicko. And Barry Meyer notes in this piece that he did just last month that he thought that was bonkers, and he told Vicente that right away. So there's going to be a second season or a second series of episodes of The Vow. They kind of ended the first season on a bit of a cliffhanger with a recording of Keith Raniere in the MCU saying, hey, you know, let's keep talking. And that's something that just left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know how you felt about it.
Well, I mean, I think The Vow, in full disclosure, I interviewed with them. They spoke to me during the trial.
So yes, you're another subject of the documentary.
Yeah, I mean, I could be. I mean, I spoke to them. I very much enjoyed The Vow, and I've only positive things to say about Jahane and Kareem, who made The Vow, as well as I thought Seduce was outstanding as well. I think it's NXIVM is a very everything about NXIVM is confusing to, I think, in a lot of ways to people. You look at the column Barry Meyer wrote, and he writes it very well. He says the NXIVM story was bizarre and sickening, and you look at someone like Mark Vicente, and what you're talking about there, where him having this sort of, well, it's just Raniere, it's not, maybe NXIVM isn't so bad. That's certainly not what you get from him now and during the filming. But there's also other people in NXIVM that have had that to start, like once they defect, it starts off with, well, maybe Keith's wrong, but you know, but everything else is bad, or everything else is bad and Keith's okay. I mean, there's a part in The Vow where Mark Vicente says, Keith's great, but this isn't adding up. If you know anything about NXIVM, it's that, well, you can't separate Keith Raniere from NXIVM. I know we've had other people, you know, Barbara Boucher for sure has been someone who has at times said she thought there were things in NXIVM that were good, that they did some good, but Keith Raniere's crimes and his actions obviously were too much for her. I think the thing that's very hard for people in this group or were in this group to acknowledge is that this was a racketeering enterprise. And I know at some point there was a comparison made a few years ago to, like, you know, the Catholic Church, or there's some bad apples. This is not the Catholic Church. This is not, you know, NXIVM was founded by two people that are now convicted felons.
Corrupt root and branch.
Yeah, this is not, that's not to say that people did not enter NXIVM with good intentions or tried to help people, or maybe they got something out of it. But it's not just Keith Raniere's crimes that make NXIVM the outcast that it is now in the world of self-help. It's known as a cult because many people made it that way under the direction of Keith Raniere. And many of them have pled guilty. And there's other people in that inner circle who maybe weren't charged, but certainly looked the other way or did things that certainly would raise suspicion. And anytime you have a criminal organization that is toppled by cooperators, there's always that line, you know, where do you draw the line between, okay, well, this person was part of it and now they're out. I mean, you've seen this with a lot of different groups. You see it with Scientology, and, you know, you see people who have been in Scientology and, you know, famous actors and actresses and they're were big time supporters of it. And then they're out and then they're as critical as possible. So how much credit do you give them after seeing the light for what they did before they saw the light? I think one of the toughest parts of this case is to look at who was the victim in this case. You know, someone very recently said to me, you know, there are no victims in this case. And, you know, Sarah Edmondson on one of the documentaries, I think it was The Vow, had said, you know, she didn't really consider herself a victim. She wasn't sure how to consider herself that way because it's not clear. Allison Mack was a DOS slave who did horrible things, which came out in court, but she was also under the direction of Raniere and gave him collateral. So where do you draw the line? And I think that's something when you look at all this, which it's very tough. A lot of people, they want to be able to say, look, I had no idea what was going on. And I think when you look at the story of NXIVM, it's pretty clear. It's very hard. Take away DOS in its entirety. There are files of people, including journalists, politicians, other people Rick Ross, their information, or what NXIVM thought was their information, was in Nancy Salzman's basement in boxes. So that's got nothing to do with DOS. So this was a corrupt organization.
And to bring the story right up to the current day, we're talking 2 days before Christmas, and you are reporting out a NXIVM story, which is the fact that Claire Bronfman has put one of, at least one of her Capital Region properties, a fairly nice looking horse farm based on the photos that I've seen, on the market.
From what I understand from talking to people with knowledge of NXIVM, that this was something that, you know, a number of people in the organization, SBNs you want to call them, had lived there at times. And this was sort of the, because officially it's considered Delance, and this is $500,000 a property, which Claire Bronfman owned. And now that's for sale. There are homes up in Saratoga County. You go into Knox Woods, which was like Main Street of NXIVMville. There's homes for sale. Lauren Salzman's house was on sale a few months ago. Other homes are on sale. So we're seeing people that are about to face sentencing, and you're seeing their properties go on sale. There was a huge forfeiture in the case. But I think in the case of Claire Bronfman, look, she's clearly making an appeal. She obviously wants, she's got to pay a lot of lawyers, and you know, she's had to pay a lot of money, including money that the feds say went to support Keith Raniere's defense and other defendants' defense. So this is something that may give her a bit of a financial, a bit of some wherewithal, but it is something to watch. You know, we've seen the fallout of people in NXIVM, and I guess now we're seeing the fallout of the property of NXIVM.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. Rob, thanks a lot for good work on this, and of course, all your, the rest of your good work across this very, very weird year. I look forward to seeing you in person at some point in the next couple of months. And with that, we will round out our last episode of NXIVM on Trial for 2020. At least that is, unless something very strange happens over the course of the next 8 or 9 days.
I'm Casey
Tyler, the editor of the Times Union, and please have a very safe holiday and a happy new year.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.